Talking about Shabbat, what was it called? Shabbat in South Africa? Shabbat Project in South Africa, and whether that's translatable to us here. And in some ways it's translatable here. Because it's relevant. We'll see it's relevant. Thank you for giving me the introduction. But in some ways it's not. The reason it was so relevant in South Africa is because you have entrenched communities where people, they quote-unquote daven at the same shul, but you'll have a certain small percentage of people who are Shomer Shabbat, and a much larger percentage of people who are not, who affiliate with the Orthodox and are willing to and interested and want to participate. Whereas here, at least where we live, I feel like, how am I going to do that? You know what I'm saying? So we're going to have, let's have Shabbat and Yad Binyamin. Well, we already
have Shabbat
and Yad Binyamin. You know,
this is like
saying
good in Tel Aviv.
Yes, do it. Do it. That's right. Do it in Tel Aviv. So the problem is, and this is the problem. Most of the people who would be so passionate and want to do it and do it in Tel Aviv
don't live in
Tel Aviv. They live in Yad Binyamin.
Or but you take Yad Binyamin to Tel Aviv.
Oh, really? Is that reasonable? Is that realistic to take
Yad Binyamin?
Called what?
Right. All I'm saying is, it's fascinating that.
Talking from perspective.
Yeah.
I think it really depends on where the person is starting. I've had so many experiences recently with Chilonim that know nothing, and they are so open to learning. It's those that know something that are the hardest to convince.
I don't want to generalize.
In Israel,
hold on one second. Everything is politics. But all I want to say is, so there's this thing called Shabbat Israeli, run by this organization called Beit Hillel. So whether you're pro Beit Hillel or not pro Beit Hillel. I said to them, like, we didn't know. Rina's like, oh, we should do Shabbat Israeli. What are we going to do? So I happened to know the guy in charge, and I emailed him, and I said, like, we want to participate, but how are we supposed to do Shabbat Israeli? He said, oh, it just so happens.
No, you're not explaining the challenges.
Like, should I invite them? If I invite them, then they can't stay in the yeshuv, and how are they going to participate? And then they're going to leave afterwards, they have to, like, park outside. It's very hard to do something like that, and it's complicated. It's not simple. So he emailed me back and said, oh, we have a family who actually asked to stay for a whole Shabbat, like a mother and a daughter. So we're going to invite them and see if they want to come. You know what I'm saying? So there are ways of doing it, but on a mass scale, the idea that we are separated, that we've in some ways sort of disentangled ourselves to some degree, it makes it difficult to then have influence later on. So this is an interesting topic that I was talking about. We had a Yom Iyun yesterday at Orot for a group. One of the groups we work with is a group in Shirut Leumi called Igud HaMerkazim HaMakat Yahadut. So these girls, they go in groups, and their Shirut to a large degree is they teach Yahadut in secular schools. So once a week they'll go into a classroom and teach something about whatever with the teacher there. And that's what their job is to do. So we were talking about this idea, and it's a really beautiful thing. These girls, they go in, you know.
There's more and more of these organizations coming. Yes. Panim al Panim, Gesher, you know, they're there, and I think people are hungry for it. I think it's those that have had a little bit of a taste of it, but
not a real taste. They are hungry for it. They are hungry for it, but what would be the best way for them to get it?
Experience.
If their neighbor was there, right, and they saw them all the time. All I'm saying is that, you know, we're, to some degree, and I'm lumping myself in this group where I'll talk. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's one thing to talk the dead talk, but you know, push comes to shove, it's much harder. You have, but I'm not moving. Okay, so this is actually relevant to our discussion, as we'll soon see. Very, very relevant, because it comes up in the discussion of Abraham and Sodom, the tzaddikim in the ear and the tzaddikim not in the ear. So we're going to start in.
That's a good connection.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Right, as opposed to the forced connections, usually?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. So if you'll turn to Perek Yud Chet, and we'll start from Pasuk Yud Zayin. Okay, we'll start from there. Perek Yud Chet, Pasuk Yud Zayin. Ooh, strong. Just the way I like it.
A little bit.
A little too strong. Okay. There's coffee over there if anybody wants. Vashem Amar, said God, Hamachaser ani Avraham Asher ani Oseh. Can I conceal from Avraham that which I'm going to do, i.e., destroy the cities of Sodom and Amorah? Avraham hayo yele goy gadol ve'atzul, v'nivruchubo kol goyei ha'aretz. Avraham hayo yeh, he will be a great and multiple, great and large nation, and through him will be blessed all the nations of the world. I'm actually going to read this a little quickly because we've done this section before. Ki yedativ, because I know him, leman asher yitzaved banav et beito acharav, that he should command his sons and his house afterwards, v'shamru derech Hashem, la'asod tzedakah u'mishpat, and they should follow the way of God to do tzedakah, righteousness, u'mishpat, leman havi Hashem et al Avraham et asher diber alav, so that God would bring to Avraham that which he spoke upon him. So God says, how can I conceal from Abraham that which I'm going to do? I have to tell him. Why? So that he will command his children afterwards, and they will follow the way of God. Why is God telling Abraham that he's going to destroy the cities of Sodom and Amorah? There's two possible answers that I could think of.
Give him a chance to change things.
Oh, okay. The one opportunity is to give him the opportunity to change things.
Or show him what will happen to him if he doesn't follow the way.
Those are both exactly correct. Or show him, I just want you to know that I'm not destroying these cities willy-nilly, but you know, for nothing, but rather they deserve it. So if you want your children not to end up that way, you should probably teach them how to behave. Okay, so which one is more, how should we say this, pshati? Which one seems more according to the pshat?
Sure, it's an agate.
Yes, correct. Why? Because it says, l'mki yedativ, asher yitzaveh et banav bebeito acharav. I'm telling him this so that he should command his children. But as if that's pshat, so it's fascinating, how does Abraham see it? Okay. Abraham sees God is telling him, listen, I want you to know what I'm doing in order that you can teach your children. And how does Abraham, what does Abraham immediately do? He uses as an opening to start the davening. Right? It's a sort of a sign of the greatness of Abraham Avinu. You know, according to the way you're saying it, right, it's a very interesting question. Had God made his decision yet or not? Had God decided what he was going to do to Sodom and Amorah?
Yeah.
Correct. Correct. So, and what does Abraham do?
Tries to change.
Yes. Correct. God says, oh, by the way, I just want you to know, I made this decision. And Abraham goes back and says, can you change your mind? Like, you know, even though you already decided, you know, some decisions are flexible. How much flexibility is there? Etc. That's fascinating. So according to the pshat, Hashem had already decided what to do. And Abraham said, I don't care that God decided what to do. That's like here in Israel. No, we decided. Like, there's never any, like, you know,
no, but
final decision. There's always, like, you know, there's always wiggle room.
That's right.
What?
I thought it was just in our organization.
Oh, no. It was like, like, you know, I don't know, we're in America. You're like, we decided, this is a decision, this is what we're going to do. I'm sure, like, you know, in Chutz Laaretz, in the places you're from, that's kind of like that. This is what decided, and we're going to go with it. Here in Israel, it's like, I know you decided that, but so what?
No, but Abraham does, he clearly thinks about it a little bit, because Hashem says something to him, and then he waits for the people to leave, and he hangs around. Like, he doesn't do it in front of them. He does it in a very tzanua kind of way.
I mean the malachim.
Yeah. Because you have that pasuk chavet right in the middle there. Vayifnu misham hanashim. Like Hashem says, Erdana, hafalat erdana be'er eha katakata ba'ahilaya.
Wait, you skipped the pasuk. Hold on. You skipped the pasuk.
Okay, fine. Vayomer Hashem, zakat zidom v'amora ki rabah, v'chatatam ki kavda ma'od. Erdana ve'er katakata ba'ahilaya asukala.
Okay.
Which also implies some indecision.
So if God had already decided what to do, what is this Erdana? I will go down and see. I suppose we're going to have to go at that pasuk a little more deeply. Okay, well, and then what you wanted to point out,
and then,
the next thing
is... Good. It's like he waits for the committee to leave. And then he's one-on-one with the CEO.
Okay.
You know?
I take your point. See, everybody understand there's sort of mixed signals here. Had God decided or had he not decided? On the one hand, he says, I'm going to tell Abraham that which I'm going to do. But then he says, Erda ana ve'eseh ve'ereh. So there's some wiggle room in here, which is why Israelis always see a reason to change mind. Right, you know.
In terms of, you know, will I hide from Abraham Asher and Yoseh? It doesn't necessarily have to be about this particular episode. It can be also a question about his relationship with Avraham.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how am I going to interact with this person? Is he really going to be my close confidant, or am I going to hide what I'm going to do with him?
I agree. I think that these psukim can be read in both ways at the same time. that it's unclear whether God had already decided or not. That maybe the Israeli attitude is correct, that there had been a decision, but every time there's a decision, there's a willingness to reevaluate. Yes, this is what we're going to do, but we're never so closed in our mind that God isn't so closed and says that there's no way that that tefillah of Abraham Avinu won't change my mind. Chatuna katolit. That's an Israeli phrase.
That I learned last week. It's not a Catholic way.
Yes, right. Okay.
It's an English word in Hebrew that I have a hard time understanding.
What does it mean?
It's not a Catholic wedding.
Catholic, there's a possibility for
in Catholic
divorce.
Weddings, there's no divorce. Right. Okay.
Instead of saying it's not written in stone, that's more common. You could also say it's a local bestseller, but
they won't say that. The Chatunah Katolit slang. Okay. So that's fascinating. Okay.
It doesn't deal with Catholics.
Pasuk Chavalef. Wait, what's that? Pasuk Chav. But Yom Hashem, this is where I wanted to really focus on. Zakat Zdom Va'amora Ki Rabba.
Where are you?
Pasuk Chav, 20. Yes, moving back. Za'akat Sodom va'Amora ki rabba. The cry of Sodom and Amora, obviously what's bothering me is ki rabba. It should say, Za'akat Sodom va'Amora rabba. Okay? Ve'chatatam ki kavda ma'od. Well, first of all, what is the cry of Sodom va'Amora? Just very simply. What are we talking about when we say the cry of Sodom and Amora? What are their cries? There's a few different interpretations. I'll bring you the Midrash, and then there's a couple of possibilities. The first interpretation is that this: what is the cry of a city? Simply,
noise. The uproar and
I'm sorry.
The noise.
What do you mean? It's a cry and a sinful cry. How does a city cry out?
I mean, it's violence, and they cry out. Violence.
Who cries out if there's violence? Ah, the cries of the victims is what I hear. That's exactly what the Midrash says in the Pirkei of Rabbi Eliezer. Okay, the Pirkei of Rabbi Eliezer says the following. By Rabbi Huda Omer.
But weren't they all perpetrators, so therefore they were all victims at different times?
Hold on.
All being perpetrators and not victims.
No, I'm saying they were gone. I mean, obviously, once you're dead, you're not a perpetrator
outsiders.
Anymore. Okay.
Hachuzu v'sidom v'amru. They announced in Sodom, this is a very famous midrash, so it's worthwhile to be aware. They said, "Kol mishu machzik yado bepat lechem, whoever gives food to the poor, la'ani v'lager v'la'avion yisaref ve'esh, they'll be burnt at the stake. Plonit bitosha lot." So there was one young woman, the daughter of Lot. Haitanis su'al le'echal migdolei Sodom. So she married into, you know, the upper crust of the gentry of Sodom. So she saw one pauper in the streets. Of course, it's always the daughter of Lot. Why is it the daughter of Lot? She comes from Avram. She comes from good stock. So she couldn't see this poor person languishing in the city, starving to death. What did she do? Every day she would go out to draw the water. So she put in her kad, in her jug. She would sort of leave it in this hiding place for the poor person to eat, and that's how she would support this ani. Amru anchei Sodom ani adzem ayenuchai. So the people of Sodom, they noticed that this poor person wasn't dead, right? That he continued to that something was funny. Yeah, how is he living? Ad shi adu hadavar v'hotzi otali saref. So then they did their investigations and they took her out to die, to burn her at the stake. Amra Elohai. So she called out to God and said, "Bring justice upon the people of Sodom." Her cry came out before the throne of glory of God. So the Midrash is clearly saying, "Za'akat Sodom va'Amora," the cry of Sodom va'Amora, the cry of exactly the victims of Sodom and Amora, that they perpetrated all these terrible things. Okay, on people, and they cried out, and their cries were heard. That's one interpretation. What's another interpretation of the cry, the za'aka, the scream of Sodom and Amorah?
I was just thinking of like the noise of a big party. It's noisy, that wrongdoing is very loud.
Really?
Yeah. Blasting music.
They go out to
really?
The
wild parties?
Yeah.
Oh, you think Sodom was
this?
Yeah. You think Sodom was like? I don't think of it as a wild college town.
I know, but
I think
no
it was a very. I think
exactly.
I think
what they are
I think it was very orderly. I think it was orderly in its corruption, Midrash says.
The Midrash talks, like I'm saying, all of our sources of what was bad about Sodom comes from the Midrash.
No, we clearly have a source of what was bad in Sodom.
Except when they came to get the Malachim.
Yes, except when the Malachim come. The story that comes after this about what they do and how they act as one, the elders of the city. All Rashi says is Hatzakata Shel Medina. Of the city, of the country, that the municipality, the whole place has a certain tone, has a cry. And in itself, you tell me, what is that?
I'm asking you.
Right, I'm asking you back. Anybody? It's a cry of a country.
Reputation?
Yeah, I think it's something like that. It's more metaphorical, that a place has a call. Right, an ethic, a tone. You know, they have them called, yeah, they have something called a country, like a morality index for every country. You can look it up on the internet, like an ethical index. Like, to what degree is corruption pervasive in your country? And they'll rate you, like Sweden is like number one, you can't bribe anybody for anything, you know, and Mogadishu is like the word, I don't have a number, you know, these where you have to do anything. There are countries where you can't do anything without bribes, you know, where you wanna set up your... What's that? Not that highly, not as highly as you think.
Actually,
not as highly as you think.
I wouldn't expect it to rate highly.
You wouldn't?
No, every single government officer is in jail or being judged for corruption.
It's a problem. It's a real problem.
No, but meaning that corruption is not tolerated.
On the one hand, corruption isn't tolerated, but on the other hand, it's pervasive.
Well, just look at our economy.
It's a pervasiveness.
Something like 30% of our economy is in the black market. It's off the books.
Because people don't want to pay 18%.
Yeah, okay. So?
That's corruption.
Right. Level. Correct.
When you get a quote from a caterer, they give you the price, and you go away and you think that's the price.
Oh, that's
you
cash.
Go back, and they say, no, sorry, plus man, another 18% if you pay me in a check.
I'm not going to, whatever. I wish I were Chafmi Pesha, we'll put it that way. It's not as simple as, I mean, it's simple. On the one hand, it's very simple, but it's a challenge for all of us. Okay. So that's the Zaka, very fascinating. What does it mean, Ki Rabbah? So if you look in the Ramban, I think it's in the Ramban, here. The Ramban says, on Pasuk, it's like pretty far into the Pevrush, on Pasuk, where does he start? Chaf. Okay, he says, Alder Chabshat. He says, you have to read the two Psukim together. I won't even quote the Ramban inside. He says, Zakat Sodom V'Amara, Ki Rabbah, V'chatatam ki kavda ma'od erdana ve'er'eh. Right. Ki, the word ki is modified because their cry is so great and because their sin is so heavy. Therefore, see the next pasuk? Therefore, erdana ve'er'eh, I will go down and see hakitza akata haba'a elai asukala.
It's also the way they say the cry, it's a unified cry. There's like a unity
to their wickedness.
Oh,
that's it. But that's exactly Abraham's point, as we'll soon see. That's exactly Abraham's question. Okay? It's not here. I heard it before.
Is that somebody's water? Because we have somebody behind on our neighbors, where if they turn on their water, it's the hollows of the water going through the pipe, and you can hear it.
It's not us. For those listening on tape, there's a siren. I think it's Tel Nof.
But it's not a siren.
It's not going up there.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's...
Water?
You know how they turned the water off the other night? So if somebody hasn't turned their water on, it has to suck out all the air. I know.
No.
It wouldn't go up there.
Maybe it's just a stick.
Twice.
It was this morning. All right.
I
think it's Tel Nof, actually. Ah, life in Yad Binyamin, isn't it wonderful? Anyway, okay. Back to the Chumash. What in the world is going on? What does that mean? What does that phrase mean? Hakitza akata is according. You're going to check. Is according to its cry that comes to me. Asukala.
There's a band that advertises in the back of Besheva called Hakitza akata, and it drives me nuts.
Really? Can they scream?
What?
Anybody want to take a stab? You want to take a stab? What that means, or just to give me the English? I have two Englishes. What is it? What does he say? I bet you, Art Scroll and this guy will say different.
Where we are?
Pasuk Chaf Aleph 21.
That's
Just read me 21 in English.
In English?
Yeah.
I will go down now and see whether according to the cry of it, which has come unto me, they have done.
According to the cry which has come unto me, they have done.
Destruction shall come upon them, and if not, I will know.
Ah, according to they have done, destruction shall come upon them. What is the scroll?
If they act in accordance with its outcry which has come to me, then destruction.
Come to you.
Everybody understand how this pasuk is like, how this pasuk is complicated? Hakitza akata, according to their cry, haba'arle comes to me, asu, they have done, kala. Kala means? Boom. Okay, but you understand the unusualness of the nature of the language. It's very, very strange. Asu, if they have done. Look at Rashi for a second, okay? Hakitza akata, shel medina, haba'a alai asu. He already tells you how to stop the pasu. If they have done, v'chein umdim b'mordam, and they continue with their rebellion, kala ani osebahem. Then I will do according to them, kala, I will destroy them. V'im lo yamdu b'mordam, and if not, eid'a ma e'esali para mehem b'yisurin. And if not, and if they don't, then I'll know, eid'a, I will know what to do with them. But everybody, every parshan has difficulty with this pasuk. It's a very strange pasuk. It's a very cut-off pasuk. Okay? What's interesting is, very fascinating is, according to Rashi, what is God doing now? Even after God has made the decision, what's...
Due diligence.
Due diligence. How? How is he doing the due diligence?
That's what I was going to ask you about. This is not the first time that God has used this phrase of going down to see what's...
Good. What is the first time?
In the
Migdal Baal. That's right. Anshedor HaPalaga. What do they say? Nirdana v'nir'eh. What is it called? Nirdana? It's very strange. We skipped over probably the most theologically...
No, it says, Vayered Hashem l'ot et ha'ir v'et ha'migdal asher banu b'nei ha'adam.
What is this language, Erdana? What? God will go down?
Vayered. Yeah, Vayered Erdana.
How does God go down? It's a very troubling language. The Parshanim discuss this language. Anyone? What's that?
It affects him. He's
I will drag myself down to your level.
The Rambam has
walk in their shoes.
I will descend to see, meaning I will come and judge.
Ah, Rambam says, you've done the Rambam? Correct. Rambam says, 1 second. Ered mimidat rachamim el midat hadin. Erdana means, usually God is on a high level of midat rachamim, of compassion. He says, I'm going to get off my high throne of compassion and descend to the lower level of Midat Hadin. I'm going to go from level to level.
Doesn't he need a witness to destroy them? He needs to, like you're saying, do diligence. Like before he destroys them, he has to go through. He has to see for himself.
How do you see for himself? Well, doesn't God see everything all the time?
Yeah.
Yeah. Doesn't God know all at all times, everywhere, always?
Yes.
Right. It's tricky.
Oh. Malachim down, and
we're going
to do a test.
Very nice.
He says, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
But isn't that the same thing? But it's not troubling to say through the Malachim to say, I will do it.
Malachim have no
unless
free will.
Unless you think
will.
It's troubling. What?
They have no free will. Malachim.
But they're just reporters. They're
that's
just
what I'm saying.
No, they're not reporters here.
They're scouts. They're going down to see.
But they're Hashem themselves.
The one hand, they're scouts. They are testing.
Yeah.
They are the test function to see.
They are done. I'm going to get down into the nitty gritty of human life. Like, a lot of times I watch, I let them make their own mess of things. I'm involved when hashgacha is needed. But now I'm really going to.
How? But how does that happen? By sending the malachim?
No, I see Erda like with an aleph. I am going to do it.
Okay, that God will go down.
Right, but I'm saying I'm going to. Now get involved in the...
Do you not find that idea somewhat theologically troubling? I mean, because what you're implying is that the rest of the time, God is like, you know,
no, God
hands off.
God chooses when he's going to get very actively involved in the nitty-gritty day-to-day.
He lets us do what we want to do. Yeah. That's least theologically troubling.
It depends, I guess. I don't know. Okay. So I guess the answer would be no. You don't find that theologically troubling. That's fine. Okay. And that's exactly what Rashi says. If they bechi, it's very interesting. Omdim bimordam. If they insist, stand on their rebelliousness. Then it's almost like that we said, the decision has been made, but let's give them one last chance. Let's try again. And we'll see if they continue in this way or not. Okay? So that's the plan. Sodom and Amorah?
Yeah.
They're not being told.
They're not being told.
No one's going to tell them. Mm-hmm.
They're not getting like a warning, like the Navi goes and warns and says, if you don't change your ways, then you're going to be destroyed.
Yeah, why not? It's a good question.
That is theologically troubling.
That they're never warned.
Well, maybe it's the idea that you don't say something to somebody you don't think they're going to hear.
No, you have to warn them they're going to be destroyed, don't you? Give them the chance.
Oh, you might get killed in the process because that's
before you give the death
outsiders.
Penalty, you have to give a warning. You have to have two witnesses. Like right. There's a whole process. This
that's
is a death penalty
said.
For us.
Okay, and then right after that, vayifnu misham ha'anashim vayelchu Sodoma. So, and God is now carrying out the plan of checking them out, of doing the test, of trying to figure out is this a done deal or not? Okay.
Well, if you read it, this could also be seen as theologically troubling. In the other
we love theologically troubling
but
things, right?
If you read the psukim beforehand as I'm doing this to show Abraham what will happen to him if he doesn't follow the
or his children
of the light,
don't follow, right?
If his children don't follow, so then you say, look, everything in the world is created for the use of Am Yisrael, right? Everything in the world is there to teach us a lesson or to do something, and so sometimes there are or are not warnings necessarily to the other people because they're there as tools to show Abraham what's going to happen to him.
What
definitely
do we,
theologically
like
troubling.
I'm just putting it out there. I told you it was theologically troubling, but there are many people who would agree with
are
that.
We, one second, are we always warned now?
No.
Never.
Excuse me, yes, we have a Torah that's warning. We have a Torah, and the Torah tells us how we're supposed to behave and explicitly what will happen for not
one second, I don't know if that's fair because these people were living in a different time. They were living after the Mabul. Not that long after the Mabul.
Okay.
Not, you know, and
yeah.
Noach did, I hope Noach transmitted the message of the Mabul to those people. And I think it was clear to the people of Sodom exactly what kind of society they were trying to build. And you're talking about a society that was ethically troubling. It's not, you know, monotheism and I'm monotheism. God doesn't go down and say, I'm troubled by the fact that they don't worship me. Mm-hmm. You know, he's troubled by the fact that they're unethical. He's troubled by the fact that there's sexual impropriety. That's the good
which is one of the Shabbat Mitzvot B'nai Noach.
Correct.
You're saying that they have Shabbat Mitzvot B'nai Noach and they're not following Shabbat Mitzvot B'nai Noach.
Clearly.
That is a warning. It's an explicit warning.
Right, no, that's like they don't have any printed documents.
That's not a warning?
Right.
The flood is not a warning?
Only if you connect it that it was sent by Hashem. If you think it's just done, then you hope it won't happen again.
Maybe they didn't know. Like the sun comes up and the sun goes down.
They forgot?
They didn't know what it was.
Okay, it's a trouble.
Yes,
trouble.
They don't have a printed document necessarily.
They did not necessarily. They did not have a printed document.
So a printed document, that's a big deal, I think.
To us.
I think the reason why, that is entirely the reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose an Avraham Avinu, because it was clear that it wasn't going to happen on its own.
So then it's Avraham's fault that Sodom isn't doing well, because he didn't get there yet?
No, it's not his fault. What do you expect of him?
He wasn't effective there? I don't know.
Vayifnu, so, okay, first of all, it's very interesting. If you
ignore,
yeah, right.
Ignore it.
No, I'm not ignoring it.
That's okay.
If Avraham...
Okay. There are no answers, necessarily.
These are discussions. These are interesting questions. Are we not responsible for things that go on in our country, even though it should be not stand up and say, you know, this is unacceptable and we should put our foot down and make sure that it doesn't happen? You know what I'm saying? Are we not responsible? We are responsible. Can we change everything?
No.
Okay. So, Rav Sarutzkin, I'm getting more and more. I'm going to quote another piece from him later.
But I think
later.
We can get on as a challenge of our times right now.
What?
Specifically what was going on in Sodom and Gomorrah. The acceptance by certain cultures of certain behaviors and other cultures saying it's not okay. And which culture, like imposing one culture on the other, I think it's tremendously challenging.
I don't think there were other cultures saying it's not okay.
Well, okay, Abraham representing a future culture.
Oh, so if you were Abraham, okay. It's very fascinating. If we were Abraham Avinu, God came to us and said, this culture of that's pervasively corrupt, and everybody knows it's corrupt, and nobody knows anything to do about it, I'm going to destroy it. Because I have to show, I have to send a lesson to the world that this kind of behavior is not acceptable to God. Right? What would we say? God came to us and said, "Dot, time, I got to destroy them," what would we say?
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Not okay. Sounds good, because then it makes it like, you know, Abraham, the Tzid points out that Abraham is the antithesis of people of Sodom. Right? The way they're pictured in the Midrash, they're the exact opposite of Chesed. And the whole parsha begins with Abraham's, he exemplifies this Midah of Chesed. Right? As opposed to Sodom, where they won't give a morsel of bread, he's giving, you know, like banquets to strangers, literal banquets to strangers. So God comes to him and says, "Abraham, I want you to win. You need a little help. So I'm going to give you a little push. Everyone's going to see what happens to people who don't act like you." You'd think that Abraham Avinu would say, "Sounds good." Right, yeah. Except
the part of what Abraham is this person of chesed, this person with extreme love of human beings and wanting to mekarev everyone.
That's right. But someone who wants to mekarev everyone is fascinating. Wants to mekarev everyone. I see it as an eternal optimist.
Yeah.
That instead of saying, you know, like, I don't know, you guys have all seen, those of you who are not from America, I don't know how much you focus on it. There's this thing called the Pew Report that came out. Very famous. You know, anybody who ever was engaged in any kind of curve is like big into the Pew Report. It's depressing.
Explain what it is.
Oh, you don't know anybody? Does anybody not know what the Pew Report was? They did a survey of American Judaism, and they kind of determined that 71% of American Jews are intermarrying, and the levels of affiliation are decreasing, as opposed to South Africa. I don't know what the statistics are year over year, but in America, it's just bad, really bad. The only community that's not dying out totally is the Orthodox community.
But we're also losing.
There's also attrition.
Huge attrition.
Well, we're losing huge attrition from people who affiliated Orthodox and when they were younger.
So what does that mean? That means that I think it's like 42% of people who were raised Orthodox are no longer Orthodox, right? So
yeah.
They become the conservative and reform, and right. Then the conservative and reform are totally disappearing. So they, it's right. Just like a door.
Right. Sound familiar? We're seeing a split between two different communities of Jews, people who are Jews in name only, people who are ex-Jews, and the small group of people who act Jewish are that. And I read it and I say, I don't know, maybe we should we got to sort of circle the wagon to some degree. We have to stop investing all of this energy and time in basically what is a dying community and focus our energies in trying to strengthen and maintain the people that we can save.
But they said that they didn't ask the questions correctly because there were a lot of people, like what they call, this rabbi in Florida wrote this article on what he calls the Chabad Jews, where they're going to Shabbos meals and they're starting to learn, but they're not affiliated with anything. So the questions that were asked, they
by and large, I think the numbers were pretty much accurate. You go around, you see.
You say that there was 10% error or 20% error in the statistics.
So, can I just say about the Chesed?
Please.
Avram was like the antithesis of this place that was against Chesed, but
right.
Pure Chesed isn't a good thing either. And Abraham had Ishmael, and it was only purified when it became chesed with din, and then with the 12 tribes, that it became like a good thing to chesed, because pure chesed is just giving with no boundaries, and it's not really...
So it's interesting, fascinating. That's right, that's right. So the Abraham is, that's what I'm saying, there's this optimism, we can save stone. Like, we can save them. And God comes to Abraham and says... No, you can't. You can't. I mean, that's like, you know, would you destroy him for this? Would you destroy him for that? Well, as we'll see in a second. But it's like, we could save them. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes out. It says, that you can't save. It's exactly what you're saying, Lori, that you can't save everyone. Because when you save everyone, you're in a sense justifying evil. You're justifying their wickedness. Give them another chance. Give them another chance. You can't give everyone another chance always. In a sense, God came down. Why does God have a Midat HaDin? Remember we said Midat HaRachamim? But God also has this Midat HaDin. And someone who only wants to do chesed all the time is only rachamim, only sees the good in people. That could be destructive. I totally agree with you. There's just a fascinating dynamic between the two. Okay? So the guys went to Sodom. Let's read on a little bit. Vayomer, Vayigash, Avraham, Vayomar. Abraham approaches, and maybe this is an answer to the question I was going to ask. Abraham approaches God and says, Vayigash, Chav Gimel. Very strange language, Vayigash. Very good. They can hear it a number of times. How do you approach God? Very strange. First of all, let's translate the pasuk. Ha'af tisper tzadik im rasha. Translate.
Will you end a tzaddik with a rasha?
Will you
also stamp out?
Will you also stamp out? What word bothers me?
Out.
Right.
Doesn't yes. It's not translated.
Well, what do you know?
It says, will out stamp.
Oh, was that? Yeah, fascinating. Will I?
Stamp out.
What should it say?
Will anger.
Oh, very good. Will if it should say, Hatisper tzaddik im rasha. Haim tisper, is it haim? No. Your guys were translating it, haim tisper tzaddik im rasha. Most Russians don't say that. They say,
well,
afilu. 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 Right? Most Parshadim, look at Unklus for a second. You guys have Unklus? Okay.
That's weird.
It's very strange. You know why? You know why? Because he can't translate it. Okay? It's very difficult. My Chabkemo says Unklus. If you look at Unklus, the Unklus. Ukrev Avraham Ve'amar. Habirgaz. Berogez. Birgaz. In anger. Would you in anger destroy the righteous with the guilty?
That's a good translation.
It's nice, isn't it? Right. Will your anger allow you to destroy? I have a problem with this.
Who's angry?
God.
God.
God is angry at the people.
God.
Yes, I was saying to God, will your anger allow you to destroy good people together with,
he's
with
like,
the people?
You have an anger management problem. No.
That's theologically troubling. Okay. Abraham's whole attitude here is theologically troubling.
But it's not,
you know.
Anger, it's his
anger.
Yeah. Right. It's
his judgment. It's not his anger. Okay. Well, I have a problem even before we get to this. Ha'aftis besadiki mesha. God, Abraham says to God, you can't do that. That's not fair. Right? You don't destroy good people with bad people.
Moshe
says, One second. That's the same thing?
It's not, because it's only one person.
Yeah, Moshe's claim is, Moshe says later on, one person sins with Korach and you destroy them all. That's not what Avram's saying. Avram's saying the exact opposite. Avram is saying, they're all sinners and you're gonna kill the good guy? What's the answer to that question, by the way? What's the answer to the question? Does God kill tzaddikim with rishaim?
Yes.
Look at the Bible. Yes. Do righteous people suffer for the sins of the wicked?
Yes.
So what's going on? Yes, Abraham, I do. Have a good day. How do we answer that question? Didn't Abraham know that? There's a way of the world. So the first answer you suggest is Abraham is kulo chesed. So in Abraham's, you know, whitewashed world, which is the way we want Abraham, this is not a criticism of him, and the way he sees the world, like a God of chesed doesn't, if there's one spot of light, right, if there's one spot of light, you can't harm a spot of light because of all the darkness. Who knows what good that person could do? But in our world, the answer is yes. This is a Kliyakar. This is a long Kliyakar. We're not going to read the whole thing. Okay? The Kliyakar says, hold on a second. He says, we know, sorry, the Kliyakar starts on Chaf, Zakat Sodom and Amorah. But in the middle, he says the following. Okay, he says, what was the sin of Sodom and Amorah? So some say it was, as we say, this corruption. He says, one another sin we know that manifests itself is Zima. Zima is a word for sexual impropriety. Okay? How do we know that they engaged in Zima? Again, it's not just the Midrash. Later on, when the Malachim came, right? And they say, what do they say? They say to Lot, who brings him into the house. Well, before that, what do they say? They say, send him out.
Yeah.
And we will, what do the people of Sodom claim, threaten to do?
To know them.
To know him in the
belly. What's the word in English? No, that's not the word. Sodomize. Yeah, right? What do you think? Where does that word come from? That's where it comes from. From Sodom. Sodomy. Okay? So, when they doubt them, they coined the term. Right? That's their cry. Yeah, every city has a, you know, calling card. Okay, very good. Okay, so, and he says, one second. V'chom, the Kliyakar says here, V'chom makom sha'atam otzei znut, any place you find sexual impropriety, Andra la musia bala olam. I don't even know how to translate the word andra la musia. You have any idea? Andra la musia is like
chaos.
What? Chaos comes to the world. V'horeget tovim v'ra'im. And it destroys good and bad. Why? Because righteous people shouldn't live in places like that.
But how do
they do? Znut has the power not just to defile people, it can defile a place. See how Kliyaka, remember we started with the question, Za'akat Sdom Va'amora, the cry of Sdom Va'amora. How can a place have a cry? He says sexual impropriety can define a place. And because sexual impropriety can define a place, so therefore that place cries out. By the way, Kliyakar is keying into something that comes up later on. Anybody know what I'm talking about? What am I referring to? Moshe Rabbeinu in Vayikra, in Book of Vayikra, says to the Jewish people, he warns them very clearly, don't do something, right? Because if you do this, the land will spew you out. Remember we learned this? What is the thing that the land will spew you out for? Specifically sexual crimes, sexual impropriety. Right? It's taki otchem, velo taki ha'aretz etchem. That the land can take a lot of things, Eretz Canaan, Eretz Yisrael, but it won't take the defilement of sexual impropriety. Okay? Va'al shelo yatzu hatzadikim mitoch makom tamei zeh din hu she'ya'anshu otam. And because the people didn't remove themselves from this place, so therefore they should be punished as well. Ki b'chol makom she'yesh geder erva shamata motzei kedusha. Any place that has a geder, that has a guard against erba, against sexual impropriety, that's where Kedusha reigns. So it's very important to guard against such things. And if you live in a place that there is such a, that there is an erba, that there is this impropriety, what should you do, says Kliyaka?
Move.
But then what chance do these people ever have of doing shuvah if they aren't positive role models to influence them? And why should good people want to be good if they know they're going to get destroyed with the bad anyway?
I don't know. What do you think? it all depends on the kind of evil.
What about when you get to a point there's no way to get destroyed anyway? Well, then what's the point of being good?
The only answer I can give you, the only answer I can give you is the way you have to do it is by building, I would say, a center of light in a place of darkness. You can't do it as an individual. And it's not feasible for a person as an individual to go into a place and say, I'm going to affect this place.
Unless you're Lubavitch.
Unless you're Lubavitch. But
that's what they do. They build centers of light. They get 1 year offending or 2 years offending, and then they have to...
Yeah, but they go by themselves. They really do go by themselves.
I just have one issue. You're talking about the issue you're talking about of evil here is sexual impropriety.
Yeah.
Specifically.
Correct. So Chabad is not necessarily going into the key area, right?
Oh, they go everywhere. Sure, they do. They go anywhere.
I bet you they're there.
They go anywhere. They absolutely go anywhere.
They will go.
They go to New York.
And they go anywhere.
But look at the Far East. They're all the Avodas are. They're in like India and Thailand and
they have been
holding. Yeah, it's crazy. Okay.
Child sacrifice.
Wait a second. Let's go back to our issue. The Chabad discussion is fascinating. So if Avram knew this, so why did Avram say to God, how could you kill all the Rishayim? So says a Kliyakar, fascinating. He says, Tan Avraham alzeh. So Avram said, okay, 1 second. Bishlama imatama anish ayde shliach. It's one thing. So if you're sending your Andrela Musia, your representative, your proxy to go destroy, Eina mavchin bein tovim l'ra'im. Then fine, you could say, then you destroy, God destroys. He says, but, ata amarta erdana ve'er'e. You, God, said, I will go and I will see. So what do we know? God himself does make that distinction. So it's fascinating. So Abraham's argument is, if you're going to do it, God, then you can't, then you, yourself, can't destroy the wicked, the good with the evil.
Wow, but...
Yeah, that's what Kliyakar says. That's how he answers this question. That ha afti spe. But in general, the answer is, Hafti spe tzadikim rasha? The answer is yes. And there's a price to be paid for living among wicked people. There's a price to be paid.
That's what I wanted to say. It's almost an irrelevant discussion post Holocaust where the tzadik was destroyed with the tzadik. I mean, you took these holy people all over Europe. They weren't living around among Rashaim. They were. I mean, I'm saying the whole discussion seems almost archaic. I'm saying, in our reality, it's not relevant.
I don't accept that term, that logic, because you're classifying. Wow, we're getting way off course. You're talking about the Shoah as being the will of God and God destroying the God destroying, as opposed to allowing wicked people to do what they want to do. Here we're talking about literally the hand of God.
Oh, fine. Okay.
They understand God is destroying the place of Sodom.
And this like statement you make, well, you can't live in Mount Rushaim because you might get destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't living around the Mount Rushaim.
It's not the only thing that will be destroyed.
Yeah, I'm
saying. Evidently they were. If they were living in a place where there were no rich, their physical locations determine their life.
It just brings us back.
Ending.
It just brings us back.
Tachya, come here.
Bring me Rambam
Mada. In America, didn't get killed.
It could.
It's not that it's a punishment for living with the Rishayim. In that case, it was just as simply a natural consequence.
Right. So, Laura, just because you asked, I have to quote you a very famous Rambam in Hilchot Deot, Perek Vav, Halacha Aleph.
Yeah.
Not that it was better.
Which I've quoted before, and will I'm sure quote again when I remember. Says the Rambam. דרך בריאתו של האדם להיות נמשך בדעותיו ומעשיו אחר רעיו וחבריו. It is human nature for a person to be drawn in his attitudes and actions after his friends and neighbors. ונוהג כמנהג אנשי מדינתו. And to act the way people in his country act, the way people around him act. We call this today?
Peer pressure.
That's right. We act the way people around us act.
Popular culture.
Yeah. Right? I could say 100%. The reason I'm learning Daf Yomi is because so many people here learn Daf Yomi. It was like embarrassing not to learn Daf Yomi. You don't learn Daf Yomi. Are you kidding? It's like crazy. And I feel great about that. And I'm sure that if I lived somewhere else, like I have a friend who lives who's a rabbi in a city. He says it's like 5 people learn Daf Yomi. It's just not a thing. You know? And that's true. There's just a lot of truth to that. Okay? Therefore, the fikach. Sarich Adam l'hitchaber l'tzadikim. You have to connect yourself to tzaddikim and dwell with the chachamim. Kedei shiyulmad mimaaseihem. V'yitrachek min harasha'im hahochim bechoshech. You should distance yourself from the people that go in darkness. Kedei shelo yulmad mimaaseihem. So you don't learn from them. I'm skipping a little bit. V'chein, therefore, im haya b'medina shimin hagoteh ra'im v'ein anshei hochim b'derech yeshara. If you live in a place where people are not acting the right way, Yelech lemakom she'anashim tzadikim. Move. Go to a place where people are righteous. V'nohagim b'derech tovim. And they act in the proper way. V'im hayu kol ha'medinot shu yod'an. V'shomei ha'shimu ata nohagim b'derech lo tova. He says, if every place is bad, k'mo zmaneinu, like today, I thought it's Rama talking about his day or our day. K'mo zmaneinu, exactly what he says. K'mo zmaneinu. Or you can't go to a place tovin for whatever reason. Yeshev levado yechidi. Stay at home. Yeshev badad v'yidom. Just stay at home. Ve'im hayu ra'im v'chata'im she'em menichim oto leshev. And if people let people hack at you all day long and they just don't leave you alone. Okay? Ela im kei nita arevi mahem v'nahag 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 calling you all the time. Come go to our party. We want to share this, blah, blah, blah. Yetzei l'ma'arot v'lachavachim v'limidbarot. Go live in the desert.
That's the answer to what
you said. V'ayan hig atzmo b'derech chata'im. Don't behave in the sinful way.
Is it?
You're going to live in an island. Yeah, you know. Don't get me wrong, Laura. We do. We do.
Live on an island.
Yeah, absolutely. This brings us back to our discussion. Absolutely. We live in a bubble. And there are benefits, clear benefits, but there's a price to be paid. Hafti said, Tzadikim Rasha, if Avraham lived in Sodom, I always wonder, what if Avraham lived in Sodom? Could he have affected them, or would we like, forget it? Like, and he chose specifically, by the way, Lot chose Sodom, we know. Lot chose Sodom, and Avraham chose the other way. And remember we learned last week, Avraham never went, and he never suggested, he never considered living in Sodom. It was never a possibility for him. Shouldn't he have gone there? If he's like the ultimate Chabad guy, shouldn't he have gone to Sodom and spread his light, and who knows what would have been? It says, when doesn't he even have the sense that some places I can't go? All right, I want to end off, let's stop, with a very incredible piece by Rav Saratsky.
Yeah, just a piece. Was there this issue of Zima, or was it just...
In where? Mitzrayim. Where in Mitzrayim? What are you talking about?
They were gonna kill
Abraham in Mitzrayim?
No.
Later on?
Yeah.
Yeah, and what did Yaakov Avinu do? Where did he send his kids?
Oh,
Where did he send them?
Goshen.
That's right. And intentionally they did it. And they made very, very, very strenuous efforts to assure that they'd be left alone. How did they do that?
There's clothes and food.
Clothes. No, no. We are shepherds. Well, how do we know? We do the thing you find the most repulsive and disgusting. And we're not going to change. And he made sure that his kids behaved in that way because they didn't want them to be affected by Mitzrayim. It's very, you know, Avraham Avinu is also the same way. I pointed out yesterday to these girls that we all, like Avraham made this effort. He always stresses the idea. He's called Avraham HaIvri. What is Ivri? Me'ever Hayam, right? The Midrash says, the whole world is on one side of the river and he's on the other side of the river. What is the whole world? I'm different. I'm different than everyone else. It's fascinating. Where did Avraham pitch his tent always? He didn't live in the city. He always pitches his tent, you know, like on the outskirts, on some hill somewhere, and he calls out in the name of God. You want the name of God?
Come to me.
Come to me. On my terms. Interesting also, when the malachim come, what does he tell them to tell them to sit?
Under the tree.
And not?
Yes.
That's right. Sit under my tree. Mm. Like, there's always boundaries. There's always borders. When Abraham goes to the people of Chet and say, what does he say to them? I want to bury my wife. I would like to bury my wife among you. What is he? How does he call himself? Ger v'toshav anochi imachem. He always has this sort of this distance, and so we see it's like a subtle dance. It's a dichotomy. There's yes, I want to affect and I want to influence, but always from a sort of distance. And he wants to save the people of Sodom. Again, what is it? I don't know. It's got to be over there. He wants to save the people of Sodom, but not at every cost. I'm not going to live there. Because they would probably have, I'm sure they would have overpowered him too. Like Avraham and Sodom can't do what he needs to do. He can't function.
You read a piece from Rav Saratskin once about putting up boundaries in a place of sexual impropriety.
It had to have been later, not this. It's not. This is, okay, anyway, I want to read. That's that. Did I?
Yeah.
It's beautiful. He says beautiful things, Rav Saratskin. Look at Pasuk Chavdalet for a second. Okay. Ha'afti spatadikim asha says Avraham, Ula yesh chamishim tzadikim betoch ha'ir. Maybe there are 50 righteous people in the city. Will you destroy and not tisalam bakom, not, I guess, give compassion to the place for the 50 people? So if Sereskin picks up on the fact, why does Avraham say betoch ha'ir? Why doesn't he say, huyayesh chamishim tzadikim
ba'ir?
Correct. So there are all kinds of mefarshim about it. Does Rashi say anything?
No.
Betoch ha'ir. It's fascinating. So Rav Saratskin says, there's different kinds of tzaddikim. What was Avraham looking for? What was the righteous person he was looking for? What makes a tzaddik? Is it a tzaddik? Remember we talked about Noach was tzaddik haya v'dorotav. Was he looking for a tzaddik? Like we think a tzaddik? Or was he looking for...
Relatively speaking, someone better.
So listen to what he says. He says, it tells a fascinating story. He says the following. Maaseh. I was once traveling on a train with Porkei Ol. He's living in, remember, Rav Saratskin was living in, can you Wikipedia him for a second? Late Europe, late, I think late 19th, early 20th century, I'm almost positive, even later than that. No, just not Porkei Ol. Irreligious youths. Okay?
No, but they have taken off the Ol, it sounds like.
Well, they call them Porkei Ol, Rav Zalman Saratskin. You have it? They're all bragging to each other. They're all telling how great, they're all bragging to each other about how on Kippur they went to a pub and played cards and ate treif. How great they are. And these guys heard, who went? Tell me who went. Did, you know, this guy go, that guy go? And they asked about, you know, Shmendrik, did he go too? Vayanu b'schok adol, Ploni, that guy? They answered, hello, who tzaddik? Ah, that tzaddik, ki hamar hayom lo eshtateif. The tzaddik doesn't go, because what's a tzaddik to them?
Anyone
who doesn't eat treif and play cards on Yom Kippur. Okay? Umidivrehem lamadati, from them I learned, sha'afilu mishem ishtateif imahem kol hashana b'holulut. Doesn't matter, the whole year that guy can, you know, in play cards with them. Right? He plays cards with them, gambles with them all year long.
Eats
treif. Because that guy won't go on Yom Kippur and play with them. oh, he's a tzaddik. You know, like you can imagine those guys saying, "Atzaddik." Oh, you won't on Yom Kippur, he goes to shul. Go ahead. Kavuz manma, bikarti saratskin. TZK. Bavuz manma, bikarti bishiva yidua. So I went a little bit later. I went to a well-known yeshiva. V'shaaldi al bachur echad. When did he live?
1881 to 1996.
Right, early 20th century. Right, he moved to Israel.
1881 till when? 1966.
Right, he was a Rosh Yeshiva, and then he came here. It was a very well-known Rosh Yeshiva. He was a Mashkiach. You give it to me afterwards, okay? He says the following. I went to a yeshiva, and I asked Mativo, what's this bachur like? Tell me. Like he was asking. V'lachashu ba'oni shehu eino b'seder b'yot shamayim.
This same guy?
No. Some other bachur in the yeshiva. I went to the yeshiva. I went to know about this guy. I said, Shalti de pratim, why? Ki I had the brother. We wanted to make a shidduch, obviously. So he told me, what's wrong? Why is he not a good boy? Amru shi marbeli kro. He says he likes to read beitonim. He reads the newspapers. The yeshiva. Az amarti belibi. So I said, harasha shel hayeshiva, the rasha of the yeshiva who be madrega yoter gvoha beyirat shemayim mehat tzadik shel lachabura. Right in the yeshiva, he's a rasha. But among those guys, he's a tzaddik. So he says, so which one was Avraham Avinu asking of Sodom?
He says, the Rosh of the Yeshiva is on a higher level.
Far higher level. Okay, so he says, which one? So Avraham Avinu says, Ula yesh tzamizim tzaddikim bitoch ha'ir. He says, he wasn't looking for the tzaddik of the Yeshiva. He was looking for the tzaddik bitoch ha'ir. In Sodom. Is there at least that? And comes along God and says, no. No, so it's very interesting that there's in every community, there's relative righteousness and wickedness, and our goal, our job is A, says the Rambam, to live in a community which will influence for the good, and then also to try to be the tzaddik betochek, to try to live up to the standard of your city, and to be judged by the standard of your city, and to try to achieve righteousness in your city itself. We'll stop.
He was a friend of the Chazon Ish.
Mm-hmm.
And the Chafetz Chaim.
Where yeshiva? Did it say what yeshiva he was in? You know, see?
In the old days, or in Israel?
In Israel.
Agudat Yisrael founded. He was the Motzes Gedolei
HaTorah. He was a very famous. He was a Mashkiach somewhere. I think maybe Panovich or something.
He was formed.
He was very well known. One second. Anyway, so sometimes he says a beautiful idea is that to be betoch ha'ir. I think that's an important message that. Avraham Avinu, even with all his chesed, even with all his desire to save and desire to do good, he still set boundaries. And it's a difficult question because he knew the cost of those boundaries. He knew that he couldn't influence, and there are certain people you can't save because
of tells.
In order to do that, you have to establish yourself. Because without that, you can't be an Avraham Avinu. So I think, and there's no clear answer to that question. It's a struggle. On the one hand, to want to live in our little bubble, but on the other hand, then at what price do we pay for the fact that we do that? Stop here.